This is a Zach Feldman Show replay on ZRadioLive.com.
The Webster Music Station, Z Radio Live. This is the Zach Feldman Show. Joining me over the phone is an author. His name is David Fairchild. He has a brand new book called The Exodus. Hey, David, how you doing? Thanks for joining me here on the Zach Feldman Show.
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Tell me all about this brand new book. I'm dying to hear about it.
This book, it's the idea of what happens when society starts to get so offended that the people who offend others need to have some place to go to. It's not like there's another land for them to escape to. And we see it through people who are offended by people who have mental ailments. And so they find a way to hide their mental ailments. The boundaries around the nation differ depending on what area in the country you live in. You can offend people in different ways, so it's different wherever you live. And where do these people flee to when the government is going after these people who offend others, and when the people who offend who decide that they're offended the most get to say how laws are created? And that's what the whole idea behind this book is, how offense, the consequence of what happens when offense drives our country, what can happen to us in various areas.
So a lot of your books beforehand, you know, one of them was about werewolves, and now you're writing about this. Did you have an interest in history, or were you just fascinated by it?
With the werewolf book, I wrote it just because it was a story I had to get out of my head. And in fact, I wrote it once, and somebody had it printed on old paper back in a time when you had to type on a typewriter.
Nice.
And somebody broke into my car and stole a briefcase that had the copy. I was going to go make copies and send me what they used to call it, a poor man's copyright, because I believed in the poor man's copyright at the time. Somebody broke in and stole it, and I had to actually rewrite it, and it ended up being a better story. But
now, did they make money off that copy, that poor man's copyright? I hope not, right?
No, I haven't seen anybody come up with it
all right,
if they did, then I'm, yeah.
I would beat them, too.
yeah, right, exactly. I mean, even if they did let them, it was a crappier story anyway.
All right, good. Let them have it, then.
Right, exactly.
But anyway, what were you saying? So, go ahead.
with this new book, I feel like, especially with everything going on in the past few years, everybody's just becoming so easy to be offended, and like they want to justify having a right to be offended, and they're looking for so much offense that I feel like we're forgetting to learn how to forgive, and we have let this concept of offense overpower this forgiveness. So I teach some classes on critical thinking, and I teach students, you know, there's people who have different perspectives, and you can't get offended when you hear somebody with a different perspective, because that's what universities are about, is not just bringing diverse people together, but it's so it can be a place where people can bring diverse perspectives, so you don't have to travel to all these areas to see these diverse perspectives. And we're kind of forgetting that, and people are getting offended so much to where they want to beat each other up if somebody says something different. And we're so eager, for instance, if an actor says something that offends a group of people or somebody with a lot of followers, that they get up and they say, you know what, we hate that person, and we're going to destroy that person. We're going to make sure everybody don't go watch this actor's movie. We hate this actor so much that we're willing to destroy this actor, but not just this actor, all of the people this actor employs, who have jobs and can feed their families because of this person. And I don't think that we think of those consequences sometimes. So this idea came to me, you know, what would happen if at some point this attitude of people just being offended because, oh my gosh, you know, you have a mental ailment, you have depression, therefore you must be coming after me. You must be a killer if I put a gun in your hand, you know, type of thing, which I know very, very political, drives people up the wall. But I'm like, but what if it goes overboard and people just get afraid of people who have something about them, whether they're afraid of it being somebody who's Christian or afraid of it being somebody who is blind or deaf or somebody who's gay. And so what this is it's like a collection of short stories that combine into one big story but it takes stories of lives of people in different areas around the future United States, which is no longer the United States we know. The different states have risen up and written up their own borders and call themselves subnations, and they basically trap people there. And the only way to get away from being oppressed for being offensive in whatever degree is to sneak out. And they use these they use the drug cartel tunnels. The drug cartel offers them a way to smuggle out of their areas. And it's and the driving force behind the story is are two girls who stumble upon a baby who was a baby in her family who had the baby without having a license to have the baby. So the state that they're in exiled them, punished them to have to live in the wilderness as punishment for having a baby, you know, even the baby itself. And it becomes this story of them coming upon this baby and dealing with this whole underground tunnel escape system.
That's a complex story. I like it.
It's very, I don't want to say deep, no pun intended, with
it's definitely
the tunnels
dark
going
though.
On there.
Definitely dark.
Oh, it's very, very, very dark. And there's some things that I wish I could say that I don't want to give away because it's got a lot of twists. One of my friends was saying, dude, you have so many twists in this story that they just come out of nowhere. I will say the book is not above killing off a character that you attach yourself to. It's not above that at all. And it's a very complicated dystopian future that one reviewer, I liked what they said. They said it feels like it's, you know, it feels like it should be futuristic, but it feels like these things are starting to happen now. And so I wanted it to be a book to get people to really think about it.
I love it. Now, that's a great concept to have. And I think that also, you know, I'm going to totally guess right now, but I'm curious to know if this book, you know, was inspired by your past experience working in the amusement parks and entertainment industry. You know, you're working also in haunted houses and theaters, you know, being surrounded by that dark, like, you know, mindset. Is that what kind of drove this book?
There is a lot of that in there. A lot, even just people I knew who had certain quirks, because everybody loves to sit there and say these are all based on fictitious and whatnot, but you know, fictitious and whatnot. But the reality is, you see things that people do, and you go, "Hey, that would be an interesting quirk to give to a character." And so, a lot of it, there's a lot of my background that comes into some of the characters. Yeah.
You know, what was the process of getting to make these characters come to life? What did you have to do?
Okay, so it's really interesting. I had anticipated this book was going to go in an entirely different direction. I knew the type of character that I'd wanted, and I started writing this story. And it was really supposed to be, in a way, a type of underground railroad for people who have mental disabilities. And as I was writing this story, the character was not going where I wanted it to go. And I was going, this isn't the character, and the story's just, I hit a wall where I went, that's not it. That's not the story that I know this is supposed to be. And so I told myself, I'm going to stop here, and I'm going to go back, and maybe I'm going to start over. And as I started writing again, this character emerged that I had no intention of creating. And she came out, and she absolutely took over everything. I mean, if I said something wrong, she haunted me at night saying I would never say that. And she turned out to be a very scary character.
Wow.
And so I told her story. And then what I realized was it wasn't the character's story who I first thought it was going to be. It was her story and a lot of other people's. And if I hadn't hit that wall and gone back, she'd have never come out. And she makes the entire story. I mean, wow. it's all her. And so that was the big process behind it. At first I started writing it, and then I just let this person live. And so I, this part might sound a little bit boring, but there's a thing in writing where sometimes people forget when they create a character to let that character live. And they are afraid that if they create a character that's not like the author, like their morals or their values, they stray from that, then people will often look at the author and say something like, that author didn't need to do that, or mm-hmm. they didn't need to have this. And you sit there going, but if I don't let this character live, all they are is an extension of just me as the author. And if every author just allows a character to be an extension of them, then you just have a bunch of characters that are the same with the same values and the same morals.
Yeah, it becomes, already pretty boring. It becomes like, you know, a one-sided chip in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I when I created her, when I was letting her live, I just decided I've got to let everything go and realize this is not me. And I just let her take off. And I got to say, it was the best thing I ever did, because I've never created a character as complex as, well, particularly her, but as any of the characters in these books. I mean, I just love her to death.
And it's still great, you know, also that you've created a story that, that exposes mental awareness, you know, mental health, and you know, also kind of shines light on it, too. Was that the case with creating these characters to kind of help build, you know, a way of for people for this conversation to kind of start up with about mental illness and about mental health and stuff?
Originally that was it. Mental health is a huge part of it. But as I was writing it, I just kind of I realized, you know, there are many other aspects out there that people are afraid of mm-hmm. and blame, because we have to have a villain. We must have a villain in the U.S. When something goes wrong, we must have a villain. And I was going, you know, there are other villains that people blame. And I want to tap into those just to show that it's not this. I didn't want somebody to look at it and go, oh, this is clearly somebody who's lashing out at people who don't agree with, I don't know, psychology or mental awareness, mental health awareness, mm-hmm. that type of thing. I didn't want somebody to turn around and say, you're one-sided. So I wanted to show a whole bunch. I mean, this thing goes after the consequences of some areas it talks about unions, what happens if unions get too offended at people who don't belong to unions and they're able to take over. In another concept, it's what happens in a society when people become so offended at words that they decide that they need to have an offender's prison, a place where people can be re-educated in how to speak in public so that they don't impeach somebody else's opinion, a type of, remember, your opinion is valid, but only so long as it doesn't go against what other people's opinions are, mm-hmm. such as your neighbor and all of that. And so I really, it started with mental health awareness, and it is a big part of the book, but it grew and branched out into other areas from there.
But you know what's great about books is that, you know, you can write and have that freedom of expression, you know, and it'll be locked away and you can't be changed in a sense. I mean, it still could be changed if it's digital, but if it's not digital, if it's right. in an actual book, you know, it's locked in there, you know, and it's printed and people can go see it from, you know, and it'll stay like that forever, which is great. I'm talking with David Fairchild. He is the author of The Exodus. And I wanted to know, you know, this book you just published and it's out now on Amazon. It won an award recently. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's actually won two awards. It won a finalist award with the Next Generation Indie Book Awards in fiction. And then I just recently, in fact, just a couple of days ago, learned that it won a finalist award with the IAN, the Independent Authors Network.
That's incredible. And, congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's exciting. You know, you write so much and you send off trying to get published and you get a lot of rejection as an author. So when you get these awards, it makes that all feeling. Worthwhile.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I'm a filmmaker, so that's literally that's the worst feeling in the entire world. You send out all... Listen, I hate it when I see like a filmmaker and I see his work and it's absolute pure shit. But I see he's like entered into like the Punjabi Awards somewhere like in India, you know, and like he's won maybe like first place for that. And I'm just like, come on, you gotta be fucking kidding me. What's going on here? You know?
Yeah, right. And I feel the same way when I go watch, you know, like a movie that's just junk. Like, I won't, I'm afraid to say any names. You know, I better not. Don't want to make enemies this young. It might. But, you know, you find somebody who makes a movie, they kill a story.
Yeah.
And you go, no, wait a minute. And there are all these other filmmakers who are starving who would have told that story correctly through film. And you're the one who got it.
You're the one who got the money, even the budget and all that stuff. Whatever. Unreal.
Yeah, right.
But you know what? This is a credit to the book. And this is a credit to your writing, too, you know, that you've won this award.
Thank you.
Because it also adds to the value of the book, too. You know, I mean, where does this take you now? What's the next step, I guess, with the series?
Unfortunately, this one here is a standalone book. I really...
Well, now you got to do a sequel because now it's won an award.
That's it. That's the whole thing. But, you know, I also don't want to kill it off. I do have another angle that I'm looking at in society because I'm very interested in taking how people act in society and kind of exposing to show... exposing our influence on each other and how we can harm each other without truly realizing. I don't think a lot of people realize what we can do to harm each other. Like, mm-hmm. we always have to have a happy ending, but we don't always realize that sometimes... Okay, well, for instance, somebody does something nice for somebody behind the scenes, yeah. anonymously. Now, maybe that person is a mean person, and people look at that person and they go, that person's just mean. But they don't see that this person is maybe also the one who's been, you know, leaving things on somebody's porch secretly or donating money to schools to allow kids to have better Christmas programs or whatever programs they have out there. I mean, I don't mean to offend anybody with the word Christmas, but there are a lot of programs schools do, and maybe this person donates to it. Mm-hmm. What we do sometimes, we get so caught up in what we visually see that we might not see what we do to destroy people behind the scenes and how well they might take it and say something like maybe this person who donates, who's visibly a mean person, hears how people talk about him, but he keeps giving and they're happy to destroy him. But then what happens when they find out later that he's been this person who's been helping them? And you know, now it used to be there was guilt trip. Now I wonder if there would be a guilt trip or if people would say, well, he should have said something. Does that make sense what I'm saying? We've changed our approaches and how we used to say thank you to how we now turn blame.
Tell me all about the audiobook too. You know, so you have now an audiobook out now with the book as well. Who is narrating that book?
The narrator on this book, her name is Jacqueline Rendell. She is absolutely incredible. I mean, I look at the two works as two different pieces of work, because when you write something, you hear certain things in your head and you go, that's it. But then you turn it over to a voice actor and you hear them do it and you go, I'd have never even heard that. And they'll do some things sometimes where you hear it and you go, ooh, I don't know what I think of that. But then it grows on you and you go, you have to accept, you know what, I get it. I really like it. It's not what I originally heard, and that's the hump that I had to get over first, was going from what I thought it would be when I heard it to hearing it how somebody else interprets it. And it's, in many ways, it's even better than what I had in the book. But this book has, to give you an example of how good she is, this book, I think we counted it up, it has something like, it has well over 200 characters, maybe 230, maybe even more than that characters. And every single one has a different voice, and every one is spot on. There were characters when I first sat down and started talking, I said, look, I don't care what you do with the other characters, but this one here has to accomplish this. It's got to be this. And we stopped, we worked on it, you know, for maybe a day or two, and she came back with it, and I went, that's it, that's her. And she just nailed the character. And then there was another one that I didn't think would be a big deal, but it turned out to be a much bigger deal than I realized, because she came up, she said, I'd like to give this character, you know, this type of approach. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, there's a kind of a twist coming up on this character. I'm afraid of, you know, of something happening that might destroy that twist. And she was able to just immediately jump in and handle it. But she is a longtime storyteller. I don't know if you remember the children's program called Today's Special.
I do not, but I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, it was a children's show back in the 80s. A mannequin in a store, and every night it would come to life.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it was very cool. And they had a children's story. Somebody would come in and read a child story, and she wrote. She went on and read as a child there. And so she just loves telling stories. What she does that's interesting from other narrators is she says, "I know this is your book baby," and she compares it to a book baby, and so she wants to give it all the respect that I have in store for it, so she knows it. And then she took over, brought it to life in a way that I never thought possible. I couldn't be happier. She's not one of those, you've listened to narrators before in audiobooks where they get up and they read and you go, oh, ow, this kind of hurts to listen to. She is not like that at all. Mm-hmm. She is amazing in every aspect.
That's amazing. Hey, you know what? I'm curious to know too, did you get to kind of use your theater skills and your theater ability, you know, directing her into what you kind of wanted to form it as?
I very lightly, I would say. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that she might say otherwise, because, you know, directors like to sit there and say no. I typically, what we did was I gave her the book and I had to turn myself off, because I know that there's got to be a wall between the writer and the actor, and I did my best to turn it off. And she would record a chapter, send it to me, and I would listen, and then I would go through and I would say, okay, so we've got some issues going on here. Sometimes they were clicks, sometimes they were pops, sometimes they were word that maybe I couldn't understand. Can we fix this word? Because it's very easy to just let those to have those things happen. Nobody can do perfectly,
of course,
the very first time out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think there was one conversation about a character being, there was one character that was a little bit too confident. And that is about the extent of where we went. Otherwise, I really tried to just give her the freedom to do her thing, because I just felt that I felt she had the knack and the insight to know how to behave with the particular story itself. And I was very pleased with it.
Do you think this could ever be a theater production? Like, do you ever think you want to take this to like TV, or you want to put this into a theater?
You know, theater, probably not. Hey, a movie would be awesome. I'd be happy with a movie. Television series, I don't know. Any writer who sits there and says, oh, no, I don't think I'd want to see my book as a movie, is really stupid and full of crap.
Well, you know, I think some people don't want to see their book into a movie or like in a visual format. I think because they feel like sometimes it takes away from the writing originally. But I honestly disagree wholeheartedly. Like, it just, I think it adds to it, you know? Except right. If you're doing comedy. If you're doing comedy, it totally ruins it. But that's aside the point.
Right. Well, if somebody were to come up to me, for instance, and say, we would like to do your movie, and we'd like to cast, I don't know, Anya Taylor-Joy as your lead character, you know, I would go, go to it, do what you need to do,
do it.
That's somebody that's going to totally play the character well and sell the movie. I'll be perfectly happy with that. And anybody who said, oh no, well, they'd just be
fair enough. So
right.
Where do we go from here? What is the next step for David Fairchild? What's like the next thing you're going to work on?
So I actually have three. I have three big projects that I'm working on. Two of which are epics, which I can't believe I picked up, and one which deals with the Twitter generation.
Mm.
And I can't say too much more about it than that. It's one that kind of came out of nowhere too. It's something that was always burning in the back of my mind. I was working on these other two epics, and then the last few weeks it clicked and it went, there's your story. And I just jumped on going with it. So it's taken over, and it's probably going to end up being something in the spirit of the Exodus.
Oh, I love it. That's great. And, you know, and to continue, I guess, you know what, see, you are going to follow with the secondary book. You're gonna make a sequel. This is what's gonna happen here.
Well, it's in the spirit of. It's not in the story.
Oh, come on, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fair. That's fair. You know what? I do say sometimes sequels do suck. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. And that's kind of my thinking. I just look at it going, you know, I like the story. I think it's tight. I don't think there's any way I could top it at all. So
fair enough. Well, David Fairchild, where can people check out the book?
So they can go on to Amazon, of course, and it's available on Kindle, hardback, and paperback. I just encourage everybody to go to Amazon, of course, because that's where everybody buys their books anyway. It's available on Audible.
Awesome. Well, the book, again, is called The Exodus, and it's by David Fairchild. David, thank you so much for joining me here on The Zach Feldman Show. Best of luck with everything, and we hope to hear from you again soon about the next book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Very nice to be here.
Anytime. The WebC Music Station, Z Radio Live, back with more Zach Feldman Show after this.
Want to hear more? Listen to The Zach Feldman Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on ZRadioLive.com.